Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's 5:38. You are listening to Chicago's Afternoon News right here on 720 WGN. We have heard a lot about the new mitigations that are going to affect here statewide in Illinois starting on Friday, all to try and get this surge of COVID-19 under control. We've also heard a lot about vaccines, and our next guest can talk a lot about this much better than I can, that's for sure. It's sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Want to welcome to Chicago's Afternoon News Dr. Jim Adams. He is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine. Dr. Adams, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's just start with what the governor talked about today, about these new mitigations. It's not a stay-at-home mandate, but is this going to be enough to kind of bend the curve again?
Well, this is the time for people to pull back. Stay at home. The virus is circulating. It's better to lay low at this time. So while it's not a stay-at-home order, personally, I'm taking it as such. I'm just pulling back my activities.
Do you think it's going to end up that way?
Well, nobody wants it to end up that way, but the more we pull back, especially around Thanksgiving, the faster we can get this under control.
Well, let's talk about vaccines now. This is where we can kind of see a little light at the end of the tunnel here. Am I right to think that?
Well, it's going to take a while to get production, and we're going to have to stay safe for weeks or months till we get vaccine, but it is hopeful and it is optimistic.
Now, Pfizer was one of the first ones, or was the first one that came out and said that their vaccine that they've developed, 90% effective. Now they are saying that they are ready to submit its data to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. What does that mean? Where, I know it's another step, but what exactly does that mean?
Well, both Pfizer and Moderna made a commitment to really assure safety and efficacy. They didn't want to cut any corners. And so they want to submit to FDA. The FDA will review all the data, review it independently, and make sure that it is safe and effective to go live for the population. And so it's a big step. It's a big hurdle. But the FDA wants it as much as we all do.
All right. Now, if you have some questions for Dr. Adams, we want to hear from you as well. Our number 312-981-7200. When you're hearing these vaccines are 90% effective, the Moderna one is 94.5% effective. Explain how, I mean, that's huge. I mean, considering the flu vaccine is what, 50% maybe?
It is. And this is a new technology. So nobody knew how this vaccine would do, but both Pfizer and Moderna, same technology, but different manufacturers, both with similar results. Moderna gave it to 30,000 people and 95 contracted the flu. 90 of them did not get the immunization. And so it's really impressive results and people are enthused about it.
What are we waiting on here?
Well, the commitment was to follow the patients, the 30,000 in Moderna or the 44,000 in Pfizer, follow them through to completion several months after to make sure of safety, to see a total how many people did get infected, to get final numbers. These are preliminary numbers, they're interim numbers. Both companies, the FDA, everybody wants to see final data
to make sure that it's safe. Do we have any idea how long these vaccines will last at the moment?
We have no idea how long the vaccines will last, and that's the one vulnerability. It's unlikely that these will be permanent solutions, and nobody knows how long these antibody levels will sustain inside of you.
Here's a question from 630. If you had COVID during the summer and you are exposed to someone else who has it now, do you need to worry about passing it off to a third party?
Well, so if you got COVID in the summer, be very careful because it's no guarantee that you have antibody levels to be protective. In fact, I've talked to several people just today, had antibody levels checked, and both of them don't have antibody levels. One had infection in March, one had infection in June. So do not let the guard down even if you've had COVID. You could get it again months later. So yes, we are always vulnerable.
So you should still be wearing masks, and you should still be distancing yourself as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, the other thing that we keep hearing about, too, is if you had COVID, that you should go and give plasma because it's part of this treatment now. What exactly does that entail?
Well, that's just like, it feels like a blood donation, and it's very simple procedure, and that's the convalescent plasma that was used. And that's still viable, but other monoclonal antibodies and other technologies are coming down soon and will be available as well. So there's a lot of effective treatments that we're hopeful about as well, in addition to vaccination.
This is 720 WGN, and you are listening to Chicago's Afternoon News. My name is Eric Rung, sitting in for Steve Bertrand, and sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. We have Dr. Adams with us here to take your questions, any medical questions that you have here. And Dr. Adams, Jody is on the line here. She has a question about cold temperatures of the vaccines. Hi, Jody. Welcome to 720 WGN.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just curious that I did hear, well, first of all, this is exciting news about the potential for the vaccine, but I heard there's a discrepancy between different pharmaceuticals about temperature or storage, and they have to be at, like, Arctic temperature. What's going to happen with whoever is going to be getting the vaccine regarding storage?
So no problems. We and every hospital is working out the logistics for this, and it is true. These are biologic vaccines, and because of the protein capsules and certain characteristics, they do have to be kept at cold temperatures. Already the vaccine manufacturer is experimenting to see if there are easier ways to do it, and there's indications that they could be refrigerated for a while, and so it's going to improve. But since these are new vaccines, they've had the most rigorous processes so far. For the individual, you get it at room temperature. You'll never experience any cold. But it's the logistics of the supply chain. And it will work out. That's not a worry.
All right, Jody.
I was thinking because I know the old shingle shot had to be at cold temperatures. But he was just curious about that. All right.
Hey, Jody, thank you so much for calling in. Next, we have Georgette has a question about the age in vaccine.
Hello. My question is, are there specific age groups, since there's multiple pharmaceutical companies out there manufacturing various vaccines? Like, you know, for the flu specifically, they had last year a flu vaccine designated for those 65 and older. And I wanted to know if there's a select group for select vaccines and the contents within each vaccine. And and don't you, as a right as a consumer or whatever, until if and when it does become mandatory to know the, you know, at least have a copy of its contents?
So the good news is this same the vaccine, both the Pfizer and Moderna and all the other vaccines, have made a commitment to test it in all the full range of age groups so that the older individuals are receiving the exact same vaccine, and it's showing effectiveness in the older populations as well. So they will there will be no different vaccines. Also, the pharmaceutical companies are testing it across different races and ethnicities to really make sure it works for everyone, and it really is appearing to work for everyone, which is really good news. So no worries about that. And of course, the individual will be given full information prior to receiving any vaccine.
Georgette, great question. Thanks for calling 720 WGN. Doctor, just to follow up on that, I know for in the beginning when they were doing these trials, though, they were having a hard time finding some people to fit all those categories. Apparently, that's not the case anymore.
Well, so it did take a while because not everybody trusts the vaccine. Not everybody wants to be part of a clinical trial. So we had to, the manufacturers and we in healthcare, really have to make sure that we have high levels of trust, because we do want to make sure that all the different populations, all races and ethnicities, can really benefit from this. But that means they have to be part of the clinical trial.
815 is asking, is there any time frame for the VA getting the vaccine for veterans? Of course, they're right now that what they're talking about is kind of prioritizing it, right?
So right now, there's work being done to see how this rolls out because the manufacturing capacity is building up. So for most individuals, it's going to really be in early 2021 that they get vaccinated or through the spring. The first priority from the CDC is healthcare workers, nursing home populations, nursing home workers. Those would be the first populations that could start to receive it as early as December. But for others, it's going to take time. The VA is definitely in a consideration, definitely in pipeline, and definitely will receive priority, but the vaccine just has to be manufactured.
All right, we got on the line here with us the Chief of Medicine, Northwestern Medicine, Dr. Adams, taking your calls as well as your texts. It doesn't have to be COVID-related, but it seems to be that there are a lot. If you have a question or a text you want to get into us, it is 312-981-7200. And now we're going to go to Steve. Welcome to WGN. Steve, you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having this show.
Thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. Believe me. My question to the doctor is, if somebody already has COVID, is this shot, could you give this shot to people that have COVID? Or does it help in any way if they already have COVID and get this shot? Thank you.
So if the person has already had COVID, they may or may not have antibodies. So if it's been a long time ago, I think the recommendation is going to be to get the shot. But it's not really known if a person actively has COVID or as recently has COVID, how much additional benefit the shot confers. So it's going to be mostly geared to people who don't actively have COVID, and those questions will be worked out in due course.
All right, great question, Steve. Thanks so much for calling in here. Here's a non-COVID question and a little news here today for you, Dr. Adams. Is the American Medical Association recognized racism as a threat to public health. Explain a little bit about what that means.
Well, so it's long been known that where a person lives and how a person lives has deep impacts on their health and even their life expectancy. So the reason the AMA came out and said that is because these circumstances really shouldn't be a determining factor. But in some neighborhoods, they're disadvantaged and they don't have the access to the schools for education or even grocery stores in many cases or pharmacies to get medicines or medical clinics or parks where people can walk or safe neighborhoods or clean air and clean water. So all these factors really have deep, meaningful impacts on health. And so that's why the AMA said that racism is a healthcare priority because these things have to be addressed in order to have a full, fair, and healthy population.
Another question about COVID here from 630. This is a text. This is something that we're still trying to figure out here. Is the long-term effects of the vaccine? Is that right?
So the vaccine. So far, it seems to be safe, but they want to complete the several-month survey of the patients. And right now, the side effects don't seem significant. But the FDA is going to review full safety data before it's released to public.
And I want a quick follow-up here. I didn't read this question all the way through to you here. I'm sorry. It was basically the long-term effects of the virus as it has to do with infertility.
Oh, I think this virus has only been known to humanity for less than a year. And so we really have such little knowledge of the long-term effects. However, people who are severely affected, some do seem to have long-term consequences, but we're just starting to unravel that. And clinics are being set up to really help people who are suffering long-term effects. But the effect on fertility, I have not seen any data and don't know.
You know, the other thing that we keep hearing, of course, is the positivity rate. And it's one of the metrics that was used today by the governor and by the mayor here to talk about some restrictions. Can you explain exactly why that is used and what that means?
So we have been doing more and more testing over time as the testing has been made available. And if we do a lot of testing, say 100 tests, but only three people test positive, that'd be a 3% positivity rate. And that would be of concern because that could spread. But now imagine it's 10% or 20% positivity rates. All of a sudden, this is a catastrophe because it's spreading very, very fast. And so we need to keep the positivity rates low. The virus is trying to find new people to infect. And the more people are out integrating with each other, the virus is finding new people to infect, and the growth is exponential. The hospitals fill up, and people are deeply affected. And then the governor says, stay at home. Don't move around. Isolate from each other. And so that's the reason. The higher the positivity rate, the more the infection is finding new people to infect, and the exponential growth is going on. That's why the pullback.
Dr. Adams, thanks so much for joining us. Chief of Medicine at Northwestern Medicine, thank you for all of the insight, all of the knowledge. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.